You cannot out-exercise a bad diet.
Action actually precedes motivation.
Keeping a food diary for about a week, 10 days sorts me out because I'm like, oh, why am I eating all this? So I'd run really smart, then go hide behind a bush, sit for 10 minutes and come back because he couldn't see me after the curve.
Hey Gul, thank you so much for agreeing to be on our podcast. All of us at TWD are massive fans. Both of who you are and what you stand for. Like, I keep telling the team that if we as a brand age as gracefully as you do, I think we would have done a great job. So thank you for being that inspiration and thank you for being here. I wanted to start off this conversation by, you know, first mentioning that the number of roles you play, that you're an actor, a former model, a pilot who's married to a pilot who has a crazy schedule, you're now a mom. And nowadays, I also see you at the farmer protests where you go to show your support. Basically, you have most probably the most jam-packed schedule that I can think of. And yet, you keep as fit as you do. Can you tell us how you do that? Like, how do you prioritize fitness and what does the day look like?
Well, I try and get it done first thing in the day. Now, the first thing in the day doesn't necessarily mean like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. or even 7 a.m. It typically means working backwards from my first engagement of the day. So if it's a relaxed day, that's completely under my control. It could be 9:30, 10. But if it's a day that I have to, you know, get out early in, and then I'll try and finish it off before I leave. So it's like T minus 30. And you know, it doesn't happen magically for me either. Every day is a struggle. And what keeps you going on days when you find that your motivation levels aren't what you'd like them to be is essentially a sense of commitment that you've got to do some things because you're committed to doing them, not because you want to do them on any given point of day because you're feeling so good about yourself and you're like, okay, let me go do this. I work out small. I don't do big workouts more than once a week, but my small workout is typically 15, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. This morning was about 25 minutes as per what this one says. Yeah.
You know, we were speaking about this earlier on about how just getting a workout under your belt matters so much, right? And it's not really about feeling motivated or not. What do you do on days where you really don't feel like it?
So my standard, you know, I was having this chat with my husband the other day and I was finding that the day I have a shot of black coffee and my half a whole truth bar, and I'm glad you're doing the minis now, half a whole truth bar, I feel like I'm good to go. And I know his whole logic is, oh my God, you're on stimulants. But I don't think it's a stimulant. For me, it's a ritual. So yeah. I get dressed, put on my workout clothes, and then I'll go make myself a coffee and I'll have a half a bar. And if it just so happens that we're both exercising together, then we split the bar and we split the coffee as well. But what I'm going to say here is that it's just something. This has come a point in life, and it'll come for everyone, where you brush your teeth and you don't necessarily brush your teeth because they will shine more. But you know that over a period of brushing, you will prevent damage to your teeth. It's not about looking forward to it and loving it, because there will be days when you will look forward to it and love it. But there are days you just need to, you know, you need to do it. And I think it changes my whole outlook to the day, which is why both of us, no matter what our schedules are, we try and clock in 6 days a week. No matter what. I mean, I eventually manage 5 days a week if there's a lot of travel and stuff, but my husband still clocks 6 days a week. Even if he has departures from home as early as 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, he will get up, he will have his cup of tea or coffee, depends on, you know, what's his day looking like. And he will do like a small Tabata workout or a small HIIT workout, or we'll just do Surya Namaskar. I think having a partner who values fitness as well, and for us, it's something we do together when we are able to do it together. Otherwise, do it independently. But the first thing we'll probably discuss when we haven't seen each other for a couple of days is, so what did you do? Did you exercise today? And yeah, the answer will be yes. And sometimes I find that in the kind of schedule and the hours that he keeps, if he can do it, then nobody in the world has an excuse. I certainly don't. More often than not, I'm fixing my own schedule. So you just got to keep at it, because you know that doing it will set you up for a great day. Your productivity levels will increase 2x, 3x. In fact, some days it will just be 10 push-ups because I'm just not feeling up to it. But I'll still do those 10. And that'll probably take me, you know, a minute or two or so. Not even a minute, actually. It'll take me like 40 seconds. But if I do like really nice and slow burn, which is what my father really propagated. A small workout is better than no workout. A good big workout is better than a small workout, but a small workout is still better than no workout.
Yeah, I'm very happy to know that you have someone you look up to and say that if he can do it, I can do it, because that's who you are to us.
Oh,
and on the point of, you know, how the coffee and the bar kick off the ritual, I think there's also a lot of research now that shows that action actually precedes motivation. When you start doing something is when you get into the flow rather than the other way around. We keep waiting for motivation and lightning to strike that we will begin. It's actually when you begin that motivation follows.
I think that's especially true for everything. And I think fitness tends to be a metaphor for life.
For life, yes.
You've got to take that first step. And I feel fitness is a great teacher for so many other things. It teaches you that you've got to keep at it to get any kind of real results with anything. And you've got to start it without necessarily knowing how you're going to feel a couple minutes down the road, a couple months down the road. But you just do it because... you know, there's a spiritual sort of angle to it, which says, you know, karma neva dhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachalan. So it's like, you've got to do it and not really focus on the results, and they'll just follow with anything, not just with fitness.
Brilliant. I want to break down fitness now into food and exercise, the two big broad buckets, and speak of food first. Tell us about your relationship with food. How do you see it? How do you plan your meals? How do you approach food?
9 times out of 10, it's purely for nutrition. I don't eat for any other purpose than to keep myself fueled up. I don't eat for entertainment, enjoyment, mood elevation, boredom, anything. You know, it's, and this has been a recent sort of a switch. By recent, I mean last 5-6 years. Because I think the whole idea of, oh, you can eat whatever you want because your exercise is so flawed. You know, the hardest workout you're going to do is going to burn about 500 calories, which is something you can put back in like 2 beers and a brownie, or just 1 beer and a big brownie. So how do you even justify eating whatever you like because you exercise? So you cannot out-exercise a bad diet. And what does a diet mean? So just the act of eating and sticking to a regimen in terms of what you'd like to eat is a diet. But I find most people say, oh, I'm on a diet. We're all on diets. Somebody could be on diets of food that's not nutritive and healthy, and somebody could be on a diet of food that's healthy. And somebody could be on a diet of only alcohol. They're called alkorexics. They take their daily quota of alcohol of calories from alcohol. So Madonna apparently is rumored to be an alcoholic. I read that somewhere. I'm sure it's trivia. I'm sure she works out like a crazy person and needs to keep herself fueled accordingly. But what I'm going to say is that the notion of eating right is somehow looked down upon. Everybody's like, oh, she's on a diet. I mean, I just feel that eating is the most important component of fitness, of wellness. Because if you don't eat right, then it's all going to go to hell. And what is eating right? Eating right is generally making sure that you eat stuff that's as pure as possible, as little processed food as possible, as little junk as possible. And we know all of that. We know that we need to have a diet which comprises fresh vegetables, minerals, vitamins, carbohydrates, fats, and protein. We know all of this. It's not rocket science. You do not need to go to a nutritionist to be told that. But if that helps you learn, then by all means do go to one, but then eventually you have to figure out your own diet. It cannot be given to you on a chart beyond a point. Somebody can train you if you've suppressed your basal knowledge of food.
Yeah, I think I've rarely met anyone who's been able to keep fit for a long period of time without learning about their food themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I like the point that you make about, you know, eating food for nutrition. That's such an alien concept for many people, because we should be eating for the stomach and for the gut. But unfortunately, the gatekeeper to the food is the tongue.
Yeah.
And so we keep optimizing for what the tongue likes, whereas what we should be optimizing for is what the gut likes. And I find that once you realize this, there's a switch that goes off that, no, I'm not going to try and please you. I have got to try and please this tummy.
I think another analogy is for those of us who keep pets. Would you give anything to your pet that's not good for it? Would you give your horse? I mean, assuming that somebody out here may be listening who rides horses.
And we're going to do a survey and check.
I'm just saying, because a horse is a performance animal. I'm deliberately not using a dog or a cat as an illustration. A horse is bred and reared for performance. Would you give them chocolate, rasgulla as a part of their daily diet? No, you wouldn't. And you wouldn't even do that to your pet at home because you know that it's not good for them. And you know that it's not good for them because it's conventional wisdom. You're not going to try and see if it works for them and damage their health and then figure itself out. And the reason bad food manifests itself in terms of results in pets much quicker is because their lifespan is much shorter.
Yeah.
A creature that lives for 10, 12 years, and if you give it bad food, you will see the results very quickly. In our case, the body is resilient. Just because you have the capability to break down food doesn't mean it's necessarily good for you. Yeah. Because genetically, we're still in the jungle. Our internal metabolic methodology hasn't evolved as much as at all, in fact, from when we were hunters and gatherers.
Yeah.
And yet the food that we're eating is as far away from them completely. So I think what it eventually comes down to is being conscious and being aware. If somebody asks me, what's the one trick to eat healthy? And I tell them, keep a food journal. You need to only log your food for a week to bring a sense of self-awareness into your food. And I do it even now, you know, every time I feel that I'm just not finding myself eating right and I'm just succumbing to walking into the kitchen and picking up a piece of chocolate for no reason other than it's there. Just keeping a food diary for about a week, 10 days sorts me out because I'm like, oh, why am I eating all this? I don't need to be eating all this.
Absolutely. I think that
there's so much junk you just put into your mouth without even being cognizant and aware of it.
That is by far the most potent tool that even I know, that track your food for a week or 10 days. The acknowledgement of what you're putting inside the body is half the battle won. Then you know that you're not doing the right thing. But I also want to move from food to the next part of fitness, which is the exercise and movement bit. When we were talking earlier, you were telling me that you like to think of it as exercising smart, and you touched upon it earlier on also, where you said that, you know, do whatever you can in the little time that you have so that you don't give yourself an excuse. But ideally, how do you structure your workout routine? What do you focus on? How do you optimize, etc.?
I think in my head, I know that subconsciously I need to work various muscle groups. So broadly, I'll break down a week into upper body and lower body, and two upper body sessions and two lower body sessions, which could come through a variety of means. So some days I'll do like a short, maybe 2K run, because I live in a gated community and I have, you know, beautiful trails to run on. And I could do a 2K run as a warm up, and then I'll come and do a HIIT Tabata based lower body routine. And I find those very efficient in terms of time and core use. And then I'll do another day, I'll do a similar warm up and then do a upper body. So if I do a lower body today, I'll probably do upper body tomorrow. And then one day I'll do 100 Surya Namaskars, because that'll completely stretch out my body. So I will, all the tightness that may have come in from the strength workout will go, and that's pretty much it. So it's really, it's upper body Tabata, lower body Tabata, Surya Namaskars, upper body, lower body. I don't put much thought into it. So with this, I'm able to tick all the boxes of strength, endurance, and flexibility. And rarely do I exercise longer than 30 minutes. Rarely.
I think that's so good to know for everyone listening, because we have this random vision of, oh, you know, these people who are actors and super fit, they must have these big trainers and a lot of stuff.
I mean, a lot of them do, Shashank. And sometimes when you have a specific requirement, like you're training to be a martial arts fighter or something, you may need to do all of that. But on a day-to-day maintenance and minor correction, by minor correction meaning, you know, correction which is up, which is in the region of 7 to 8 to 10 kilos. I mean, 10 I consider a minor correction. Anything beyond 10, then you're going to have to do a serious intervention.
Yeah.
Both through how you eat primarily and then be very committed to exercise. But if you're in maintenance, I feel that you can do 20, 25 minutes and train the muscles that need to give you the form that you have. Because the idea is not to lose muscle tone.
Yeah.
I read somewhere many years ago that you maintain your physique in terms of its fat percentage through what you eat. And your muscle tone and muscle strength comes from the exercise that you do. You cannot lose weight by exercising. It's a fallacy because you'll drain yourself. You'll have muscle atrophy. You'll go crazy running for, an hour a day. And ultimately, I don't think that's an efficient way of either losing weight or remaining fit. Unless, of course, you're training for a marathon where you're doing 60 kilometers a week. That's a separate space. But in a routine, normal scheme of things, if you're a person who goes to work 9 to 5, or if you live in Bombay and you're doing like 9 to 9, because that's more like reality, you lose so much time in the car. I think it's really efficient to eat right and exercise smart. Exercise cannot absolve you of the sins of eating wrong. You can indulge. And the other thing is regulating indulgence. Right? How often do you want to indulge? Ultimately, it's a function of maintenance, or are you looking to do some kind of correction?
I remember you said a very interesting thing that you don't look at them as cheat meals, you look at them as treat
meals. Yeah, absolutely. It's a treat meal. Although I've had a fair bit of treat meals over the last couple of weeks.
Right. That speaks to your relationship with food. It's not an adversarial relationship with food.
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, I celebrate the idea that, I'm going to treat myself. Just like I treat myself to say, buying myself a Dior bag. It's something I've planned, and I'm not somebody who's reckless and walks into a store and gets something. I like to think about it for a long time, or that I'm going to reward myself with this new Dior. I don't fantasize about food, but on days that I do, I'm like, I'm going to have that glass of beer or that glass of wine or that champagne. Suppose I'm going to have an occasion. So like, for example, I have a wedding anniversary. I'm going to have those 2 glasses of champagne. So I'll think about it and look forward to it as a treat. Or if I feel like I'm going to have that really nice brownie, I'm not just going to randomly eat it because it reduces its value. I know sometimes you use the word reward and treat interchangeably, but I really like to think about the joy of having it and also examining the necessity of it.
Yeah.
You don't go walking just because you can afford it. You don't walk into a fancy designer store and buy something just because you can afford it. Just because there's food in my kitchen doesn't mean I have to eat it.
Yeah.
Do I need it? Can I justify it?
And I think, again, all of us who've ever lost some amount of weight would relate to the fact that actually the scarcity elevates the experience, that whenever you have it, then you really enjoy it. Whenever you're allowed to have it, or you allow yourself to have it, you really enjoy it. I also want to touch upon running for a bit. I know it was one of your early loves, and now you run a little lesser than you used to, but talk to us about like what running means to you and why you were and still are so in love with running.
So I was inculcated into fitness through running. I remember I was 15 and my father said, now go for a run. And I was like, why? So in fact, actually 12. And he said, because that's how you must keep fit. I'd run really smart, then go hide behind a bush, sit for 10 minutes and come back because he couldn't see me after the curve. And a lot of the folks that I would meet, my father's colleagues, would say, what a smart girl, she goes running in the morning. And that began something that, some kind of a exhibitionist sort of a, I mean, it's not the right term, but I kind of began being appreciated for doing something which was not really rocket science. Other kids would basically wake up in time for school and barely make the bus. I used to be woken 1 hour early to go for that run that I would fake and scam my way through and come back and sort of, of course, I was supposed to go for a 20-minute run. I'd do like a 5-minute run, but I'd still feel good about the 5 minutes that I did because I'd feel all happy. 2 years later, this whole scam continued for a bit, and then I went to boarding school, and then there was no choice. We had to report for PT at 6:30. There was just no two ways about it. So we had to do some basic jumping jacks and 5, 6. And we had to do a small 1.5 or 2 kilometer run. But I wasn't committed. I mean, I was still being forced. It was when I was 15 that we were living in Africa, and my father had a sort of a 9-to-5 job for the first time ever, and he said, "We'll go running together." I was like, why? But the thing is, I'd already been conditioned by the environment into believing that only those people who are fat need to exercise. And I was like, I'm not fat. And he said, you must exercise so you don't become fat. was the only way he could convince me. I was like, so finally, it was a diktat. I couldn't do anything about it. And I would start running and he would run with me. We sort of a 3 mile, the community that we lived in had a 3 mile perimeter. That's what I did. And I was forced to do it. And I used to feel incredible after I finished. And then he explained to me what endorphins were and how they made me much more efficient. It would take me an hour to come back and finish my entire coursework. Because the international school system is not really big on studying for hours. It's about being efficient and remaining consistent with your work so it doesn't pile up. So whatever coursework was given, I would diligently do it. And then I would be out doing everything all the other kids were doing. I think that the efficiency it brought into my studies and how amazing I would feel. And the fact that I got to be known as the girl who runs. And people would cite my example to their children and say, oh, look at her, she runs. Why don't you do something? Not because they were probably interested in fitness, but they just thought that rather than sitting and listening to music, which was a full-time activity when we were growing up, you could be doing something better with your time. So I was that kid that parents would point their children to and say, look, she goes running, why don't you do this? So it just became the lowest hanging fruit for fitness.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's still the quickest reset, Ishaq. You know, if I fall off the wagon, and I do often, I just do like a simple thing like, okay, 21 days of 21 minutes of running. That's it. And then that puts me in the groove of things. Or 15 days of 15 minutes of running. Because I know when I finish the 15 minutes and come back, I'll want to do more. So it won't just be 15 minutes. All the 15 minutes are the bare minimum. Then I began running marathons sometime in 2004 when the idea of marathons was first introduced to India through Mumbai, through the Mumbai marathon. And I ran consistently 2 events a year, which was Delhi and Mumbai for about almost 12 years till 16. And after 16, I sort of, maybe 16 or 15, I can't remember the last time I did a big run. And then I just realized that I didn't have the time that was required to train 60 kilometers a week. So I just began looking at more efficient ways of exercising.
Yeah, but 12 years on the trot is quite a
bit. But 12 years of averaging, you know, I mean, considering one only trains during season, which is one starts training sometime in October for the Mumbai one, and then July for Delhi, which is usually in October, November. So basically from July till January, one is training. So during that period, one was doing 50 kilometers a week.
Ah, so Gul, I was talking about how there is this path to getting addicted to running and exercising also, just like one reaches out to a cookie when you're feeling down. Once you experience the high of running, you can reach out to a run also when you feel down. You don't have to reach out to
And it's very efficient. And in fact, once you get the hang of eventually, you know, elevating your heart rate for about 14, 15 minutes, you realize that there's multiple ways of doing it. During the lockdown in Bombay, I would just go up and down the stairs. The moment I felt stressed, because there was no limitation of what time I could go up and down stairs. And we lived on the 8th floor. So I could go up and down and I'd do about 100. The goal was 100 floors and it would take about, I've forgotten, 3 minutes for one. So yeah, about 30 minutes. Also great for dispute resolution. Very often my husband and I will have an argument and go out grudgingly. And by the time we come back, we've forgotten what we were disputing.
Yeah, that plays to the theory that eventually all of us are a combination of a lot of chemical reactions.
Yes, very much. Very, very much. So I think if I had to pick 2 things as to why I got on the fitness wagon and why I've remained, I think largely because of my father pushing me and personally leading by example. He wasn't somebody who was sitting at home, you know, eating unhealthy and sort of overweight and telling me, go run. He was somebody who also did it. And then he realized somewhere that I was scamming him and figured that, okay, you know, I'm going to go with her. So for 2.5 years, for the entire period of time that we sit in Lusaka, Zambia, he ran every single day with me. In the evening, we'd come back from work. He'd have a full day at work. I'd have a full day in school and we'd come back and we'd go for a run together. Except when we were on holiday, which meant we were, you know, out for the long weekend or something. Him leading by example and demonstrating that you can do this regardless of what kind of a day you had at work. Not being, oh, I'm so tired, tough day at work. And B, having a mate, and that's really how I see my husband, I don't even see him as a partner. I just see him as a mate, like a running mate and an eating mate and a bed mate and many mates, you know, like a parenting mate. From the time we first started dating, like 20 years ago, exercise is one of the things we did together. Like, you know, whenever he'd come over to my place, he'd carry like a workout bag. And we'd just go for a run together and we'd play some badminton and stuff. Having him as a role model, as somebody who has a really, really grueling schedule with hours and nights, flying through the night, the next day flying through the day. So adjusting the body clock and still being able to clock in his 20, 25 minutes a day regularly. And he's a couple years older than me. So I think if that, the sense of camaraderie and companionship that I have and have a workout mate, plus a role model like my own father who sets the bar so high. And then I keep getting these scary updates. Dad has finished 35 kilometers of cycling. And I'm always getting these days. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm so tired. I've had such a long day. And suddenly I'll get ping, dad finished a workout. And then you go and see what it is. So having the ecosystem around that fuels your desire to remain fit is also very, very important.
I'm amazed that there is a group of people in which you're the slacker.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like that. In fact, very often it's me who's the slacker because I'm like, I don't feel like doing it because I'm trying to show that what I'm trying to demonstrate is that it doesn't always, the back end of it doesn't always look as glorious as the front end of it. The struggle to even get into those workout shoes and your workout clothes is a real struggle, which is why I keep my workout clothes ready. So the first thing I do when I get up in the morning and go to the loo is quickly put them on and come out of the loo. I don't come out of the loo and lounge in loungewear. I lounge in workout wear.
Yeah, it's another one of those small things that kicks off the routine.
Also, on a day you're working from home entirely, it keeps you committed. So even though I may procrastinate and suppose I've been in my workout clothes from say 7 a.m. or 8 a.m., but eventually I go and work out at 11. Because I will not start my first engagement for the day without exercising. So sometimes even though I could have done a big good run, come back, done a full strength routine, but because I've just been procrastinating, I'll end up only doing 10 minutes of Surya Namaskars.
Yeah.
I will still do something.
It's pretty obvious from your story, and I think there's no dispute about the fact that if parents get kids to start on the exercising and healthy eating early, it's a habit that stays for life. Do you know of people around you who started in their 30s and 40s and are yet as, you know, hooked on and as clued on as you are? Any tips and tricks for those?
I have a friend of mine, Amit Sheth. And he is somebody who took to running at like 40. And him and his wife would holiday, Nipa and him holiday at a place where there is a marathon happening. So they have been, and this was like when I first met them 15 years ago, when we all got into running. And he actually saw the Mumbai Marathon on TV and said, "Hum bhagte hain." A Gujarati with no background in running and sport, as far removed from fitness as ever. He saw the Mumbai Marathon on TV and started training for it. I think he started running 3-4 years into it. And now he's one of the ambassadors of the Comrade Run, which is the hardest run on earth. It's 89 kilometers, happens in South Africa, of which 79 kilometers are hills. And you must complete it within a stipulated period. Otherwise, you run 40 kilometers, but you don't hit a waypoint, then the death bus will come pick you up. But the thing is, like anything you pick up, whether it's a guitar in your mid-30s or whether you decide to start playing golf, you've got to stick with it. It's not about trying it for 3 months and saying, it's not working. I'm not getting the results I want. And there are compromises. Remember, Amit's written many books. He has an outstanding book called Dare to Run. And he has a blog by that name as well. And what he says is that it did mean that the husband and the wife consciously took a decision to have no social life because they had to be up at 5 running every day. But maybe that's what they wanted to do. But I'm not saying you have to be that extreme. If I have an evening off, there were times when I was working out in the evening because that's what my husband and I could afford in terms of the one activity we could do together. And we were doing evening exercise routines. I mean, for the longest time, we were exercising in the evening.
Yeah.
So I don't think it really matters whether you do a morning or an evening routine. But for us, one of the happiest things to do together is to exercise. And our son joins us. It's my one of the times that I spend quality time with him in the day. we read together, we cycle together. But he's always with me when I'm exercising, when, not when I'm running, but which is another reason why I've limited my running, because I'd rather be exercising with him around. That's also a big part of my time with him. So when I'm doing anything else, he's with me, except for when I'm running, because he can't come with me when I'm
running. I actually wanted to, you know, bring this to a close with that exact question, that how are you inculcating both this, you know, the right food habits and the right exercise habits in your son? How are you planning to do that?
I think exercise first, since we were talking exercise, he just sees me doing it. I remember when he was about 6 months old, we still have a building gym, which a couple of us in the building got together and made. And I would take him down to the gym at about 9:30, 10 in the morning, and he'd be strapped in his pram, and he'd watch me do a 15-minute workout. And again, it had to be an efficient workout, because he would start getting cranky after about 20 minutes. I couldn't do anything longer than that, and I wanted to spend that time with him. And I wasn't trying to demonstrate being like a fit mom when I was doing that. I just thought it'd be a great way to spend time together. And it started out like that. And then when he became a little bigger, he began roaming around the gym, and I realized he could probably injure himself. So I began distracting him with things that he could touch, like the foam roller or that big medicine ball. So he would hang out with me, and it's something that we've been doing for a long time. And very, very often, he'll suddenly surprise me with like a perfect bhujangasana, and maybe 50% of the whole Surya Namaskar routine, he'll get like the first four postures. Because he's watching and observing and watching and observing. And this morning, we were doing mountain climbers, and he kind of, I was pretty surprised that he got the whole hand-eye coordination of it right.
That's amazing. So,
he watches and he just copies. So he'll try and do push-ups. And because it's a unadulterated form, he will start by just following what I do and keep his knees down, because he doesn't have the strength. So he does what is called a training push-up without even realizing that he's doing it his body just said, oh, I can't pick it up, so I put my knees down. So I think just having him watch us do it is something that's sort of inculcated in him the thing, that's something we do together. So every morning he's like, can I come running with you? And I say, no, I'm coming back in 10 minutes. We'll go and exercise together. And eating right, again, is by watching. So we don't keep processed junk food at home. He doesn't see us drinking aerated drinks. He doesn't see us munching on potato chips. Is that what they're called? Wafers? It's not available. We don't eat any of that. He doesn't see us do anything that we wouldn't want him to do. And interestingly speaking, he's very keen on salad. Our evening meal is usually salad. Like ever since he was about 8-9 months, he used to want to try and eat red bell peppers because they look colorful, red and yellow bell peppers. The sugar addiction that we give our kids, bacche hai, let them eat sugar, it's okay. The thing is, you are building in them a reward response mechanism, which is what sugar does. Sugar is highly addictive, of course, highly processed, and definitely not good for your glycemic index. And over time, these addictions get built as sugar being a reward. So you do something good, I'll give you a chocolate. Why? There can be many other rewards built into making a child responsible and reward-centric and performance-centric. So I used to be given a lot of sugar as a kid. Again, not just for the sake of being given, but we would have homemade sweets. Gajar ka halwa used to get made in winter and made into little barfis and kept in the house. But I realize now that fortunately growing up in a middle-class family with not too many resources meant that sugar was regulated. I didn't have an ice cream when I felt like. I used to get an ice cream when we went out once a month and I was able to get a sundae or something. So the very fact that we had limited means allowed us to regulate the sugar intake, but it was still an addiction I built over time myself when I could get my hands on it more. But we've sort of completely prevented any kind of sugar intake to him. He didn't know what chocolate was for 2.5 years of age till some of my friends gave it to him on the sly. And even now when I go at night, you know, sometimes I go to have a cup of milk and come up, he's like, Mama, what are you eating? Because he can smell the chocolate from my mouth. Or sometimes I give him a date. And I say, eat this. This is Indian chocolate. Now he's like, I don't want Indian chocolate. But it's okay. There's no other alternative. There's nothing else available in the house for him to eat.
This chat is motivational for me because the point of the chat was that Upanag has her hacks. She has to plan her food, that she also has days when, you know, she works out for 20 minutes or 10 minutes and that's enough, you know, and that none of us have any excuse to not get off our behinds and do this. Thank you so much, Gul, for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Shashank.
And that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much, Gul, for taking the time. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Vinita Singh, founder and CEO at Sugar Cosmetics, who, apart from running one of India's hottest startups and being a mom of two, also happens to be an Ironman triathlete. If you want to know how she does it, join us in episode 2. And hit the bell icon so you don't miss any release of the Whole Truth Project.